simple is sometimes not easy. It's an incredibly beautiful piece, as is always the case almost with Tchaikovsky, right?
Shamelessly gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was simply not afraid. For one reason or another, I think for him expression was above everything else, maybe even at expense of overall structure of the work. But he needed, first of all, to express what he felt. It may sound cliche, but I think with his music, it actually is true. If you analyze the structure of the first movement of the concerto, it's not perfect. It's far from perfect. But at the same time, all of this is compensated by incredible outpouring of emotion. And I think that is, to me at least, is more dear than any cerebral structuring.
It often seems to be incredibly joyous from him. What happened to this darkness of the Russian soul?
Oh, it's there.
Yeah?
Of course.
And in this piece?
Of course. Yeah. Except this darkness is transformed to hope and to yearning for better days. But no, that dark, you can't possibly find a Russian composer without dark side.
And what about a Russian musician who's playing a Russian composer's
Well,
music?
I'm an Israeli, so...
you have Russian roots, though, right?
I do, of course.
And how does that then play into how you approach this, or does it have anything to do with anything?
Well, from one side, of course, it's natural that I feel this music very close to me. At the same time, I think music is the most cosmopolitan, the most abstract, the most unrelated to nationality or geographic location form of art. So I really don't think it matters where I am from. It does not mean that I will play Tchaikovsky or Shostakovich better or differently than that I will play Brahms and Beethoven.
But will a French or a German violinist get it all as much as you do?
Of course.
Yes.
I honestly do not think it matters. Just to give you an example, one of the most incredibly heartbreaking renditions of Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet I heard was with NHK Symphony in Tokyo, conducted by Myung-ho Chung, a Korean conductor. If I was not surrounded by people, I would have been crying. I don't feel comfortable. But so here is your, as un-Russian as it gets, and yet this was really the most extraordinary Prokofiev I've ever heard.
And Kurt Mazur talks about being in China and hearing the greatest choral performance of Ode to Joy coming from a group of Chinese
singers. I am not surprised.
No. You're playing this piece on the violin that was used by the person who originally refused to play it. Tell us that story.
Yeah, it's sort of, I feel sort of as a closing a circle in a way, a historical circle. It belonged to Leopold Auer. It's a Stradivari violin that's on loan to me from the Stradivari Society of Chicago. This was his concert instrument. Tchaikovsky undoubtedly heard him play time and again in St. Petersburg. He was Tsar's violinist, after all, the fiddler in Russia. So with this sound in mind, he was composing the concerto. And then Mr. Auer, for one reason or another, refused the dedication. And Tchaikovsky was heartbroken. And then 2 years later, the piece was premiered by the new dedique, Adolf Brodsky, in Vienna. And we know the story that Eduard Hanslich, the great Viennese music critic, wrote in his review that until last night we did not know that music could stink to ear. And Tchaikovsky was again heartbroken. He just didn't have any luck. It's amazing. The first piano concerto and the violin concerto were dismissed as garbage by musicians and critics. And we can't imagine now history of music without these two pieces.
And it's particularly hurtful because this is a man who wore his heart on his sleeve.
Yes.
In his music.
Yes, he was.
And presumably did so in his life as well, so these would have stung particularly badly.
Absolutely. He was incredibly vulnerable emotionally, and I think it also comes across in his music. So I can't imagine how he felt. I mean, he was stabbed just with this concerto. He was stabbed in the heart twice. It's terrible.
But he never hardened. He never became cynical. As he ages, he's not trying to create a legacy that says he's anything other than who he is.
No. He did explicitly say goodbye in the Sixth Symphony. For whatever reason, we still don't exactly know how and why and he died. I mean, there are theories, but he knew. He knew it was a clear either end or beginning, whatever you call it, or both. But it is amazing that this the life that he led, being homosexual at that time, was I can't even imagine what it was. Forget not being accepted. You couldn't have.
It's pretty tough to be like that in Russia today.
Today, there you go. There you go. And imagine back then. And yet he remained himself. He probably decided that he will be heard all his life and accepted it in a way.
Tell me about your pilgrimage back to St. Petersburg with this violin and what happened there.
Well, that was one of the most touching experiences, actually. I was in St. Petersburg without any concert scheduled, just visit. But I did have the violin with me, so I went to the St. Petersburg Conservatory, where our Todd went to the classroom number 25. That's his room. It's still called the Auer room. And there is a huge portrait of Auer hanging in the room. So all I could do is open the violin and play to the portrait, the Tchaikovsky.
With a sense of what? Look, it's not that bad. Look, it's not that difficult.
He did come back to the piece later
right,
he made all his students play it. And thanks to them, the concerto is this mega success that it is. Heifetz, Milstein, Elman, they all recorded it. They all played it all over the world. And it became, thanks to them, what it is. So I really don't hold anything against our... No, it was sort of saying here, it still is playing.
This repertoire and repertoire of this nature, big Russian romantic repertoire, is meat and gravy. It's everyday food for this orchestra. What's been your experience of performing this with the Philadelphia Orchestra, who have, at least on this side of the Atlantic, such a reputation for this music?
Well, it's the reputation, of course, precedes the orchestra for many years now. And I grew up listening to the recordings of Ormandy and Stokowski and Muti, etc., etc. So what we call Philadelphia sound, the legendary Philadelphia sound, of course the hall has changed, generations have passed, it's still there.
And this still feel it?
Yes. It might be my imagination.
I think in the repertoire like this, it's definitely there.
But there is, I think, undeniable passage of generations, and they do pass the information one to another. Somebody just approached me saying that his grandfather studied with Auer in St. Petersburg, and I have his grandfather's recordings. You can't possibly say that this does not affect this gentleman here in the orchestra, the way he plays and the way he will
pass on to
the younger generation. There are concert halls that have spirits floating around. This is an orchestra that has spirits floating around. So it's incredible joy.
Well, it's been a real joy to talk to you as well. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.